You're listening to All News All Morning on the Motherlode's News Station, AM 1450 and FM 102.7 KVML. Yesterday, Congressman Tom McClintock delivered remarks on the U.S. House floor. Here are the unedited words of Congressman McClintock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a few months ago, America enjoyed the most promising economic expansion in our lifetimes, lifting millions of Americans out of poverty, boosting wages for American workers, and producing the lowest unemployment rates in 50 years. Today, the American economy lies in rubble, with tens of millions of Americans thrown into unemployment, poverty, and despair. Now, that damage was not done by a virus. It was done by ordering entire populations into indefinite home detention, shuttering countless businesses, and desecrating the most fundamental human rights that our Constitution commands our government to protect. Now, we're told to follow the science and data. That would be nice for a change. So what does the science tell us about the severity of COVID-19? Well, we know that about 80% of those who get it either have no symptoms at all or experience it as a mild respiratory infection. In New York, 74% of those who died were over age 65, and just 0.06% were under the age of 18. 3/4 of those who died had underlying medical conditions. So how does it follow the science to close the schools where it poses the least danger, while packing infected patients into nursing homes where it poses the greatest danger? Once epidemiologists began surveying general populations, they discovered the disease isn't nearly as severe as the claims that set off the global panic. Researchers at Stanford University surveyed the population of Santa Clara, California, and estimated a fatality rate of 0.17%. New York serology tests revealed a fatality rate of 0.5%. So simply stated, if you get the flu, your chance of survival is 99.9%. And according to these studies, if you get COVID-19, your chance of survival is better than 99.5%. So how does this science justify throwing nearly 40 million Americans into unemployment? Does the science support population-wide lockdowns? Well, in 2006, based upon an Albuquerque teenager's science paper, the Bush administration proposed mass lockdowns in the event of a severe flu pandemic. Now, leading epidemiologists warned at the time that, quote, the negative consequences of large-scale quarantine are so extreme that this mitigation measure should be eliminated from serious consideration, end quote. Well, it wasn't. Now, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has now admitted that 84% of COVID-19 hospitalizations in New York are people who are either already quarantined at home or are at nursing homes. Statistical analysts, including Stanford University's Michael Levitt, Tel Aviv University's Isaac Ben Israel, Kentucky State University's Wilfred Riley, and Cypress's Semiconductor's T.J. Rogers, are finding no significant statistical difference in the infection curves between those jurisdictions that have destroyed their economies and those that haven't. In fact, a study by J.P. Morgan has found an inverse relationship as economies begin to open back up. A study of 318 outbreaks involving 1,245 cases in China found just one outbreak that occurred indoors involving just 2 cases. 80% of the outbreaks occurred in people's homes. So how does it follow the science to close outdoor venues and order people indoors? Mr. Speaker, it's high time we considered how many Americans will die because of the COVID-19 lockdowns. The Well-Being Trust predicts up to 75,000 deaths of despair due to suicide and drug and alcohol abuse because of the lockdown. In March, the Epic Health Research Network warned of a 94% decline in breast, colon, and cervical cancer screenings. The Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network reports a 22% increase in children calling for help. A 2011 Columbia University study funded by the National Institutes of Health estimated that 4.5% of all deaths in the United States are related to poverty. So how does it follow the science to destroy the livelihoods of millions of Americans, cut them off from their social networks, force them into isolation, and plunge them into poverty and despair? Now, I don't blame public health officials. They have the luxury of ignoring the effect of their policies beyond their area of expertise. The responsibility rests rather with the public officials who failed to consider the catastrophic collateral damage that they've caused, who became so drunk with power and so besotted with self-righteousness that they lost any reference to common sense or any concern for the damage they've done. I yield back.